Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio stations. And you're live with the best mind in Black America, me, Sean Williams, and this is the Cutting Edge Show. This evening, my guest co-host is Justin Jackson. He has a bachelor's degree in economics. Welcome, Justin, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
According to a new analysis by researchers at Babson College found that Black entrepreneurs start businesses at higher rates than other groups and have high rates of female entrepreneurship. And that was from their August 17, 2020. And Justin, you can take it off from here.
Well, I think tonight and for the listeners who listen regularly, some of the things that we've been talking about in general, besides the elections and things that have been going on in the political spectrum, is, you know, how do we gain Black independency? And I think one of the far most important things that we have to do is invest in Black businesses, but we can invest in Black businesses if we don't have Black businesses to invest in. That's why it's very important for people at all ages, whether you think you're too old or you think you're too young, you're not. You know, we all can start businesses and get our ideas and actually make money and generate great incomes for our families and also continue to push the needle forward. And if we have any callers that's out there who have their own businesses or even thinking about starting their own businesses or even have any questions on how to start their business, feel free to call in. Definitely want to get a lot of this information out there and see us continue to grow the Black entrepreneurship and Black businesses, not just in the United States, but worldwide as well. 516-531-9540. If we have any callers, you can go ahead and put them through. But just starting things off, a lot of people don't even know where to begin when we're talking about starting a business. To a lot of people, you know, that's like doing calculus. And sometimes it is doing calculus, but not necessarily always. Starting a business, there actually are 10 simple steps that any business, anyone who wants to start a business should follow. Step one is conduct market research. And pretty much what that means is understanding exactly what you want to do, what your idea is, what is the good that you want to provide, or what is the service that you want to provide and ultimately generate an income and generate money from. Once you have that thought, do research on who all can benefit from that good or service. How big is that demand? And then also look at your competition, how much supply is out there. And by doing that market research, what that does is gives you the data that is needed to be able to make a conscious decision on whether it's worth you starting that business or whether it's not. And then also, say, for example, if it is worth you starting that business, it also helps put down the guidelines and start the roadmap to how the business should be structured, such as prices, wages, and things of that nature.
We have
second,
a caller.
Yes. Who's our caller?
Hold on 1 second. 5073. Do you have a question or comment?
I came in a little late, so I'm sort of behind on what you're talking about, how to start a business. And I was listening to what he said. I understand some businesses you can start on just something that you do. And it might not even have anything to do with what's necessary or needed in that area. If you got a good thing going, and some people are pick up on it anyway. You don't
always
have to go out and research what's needed.
I think research is very important. I think research is very important on any business that you want to start, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, in every business that you start, there is a risk. Regardless if it's a high risk or low risk, there's always a risk. And so just having that information.
Some businesses you do not have to research to make it.
Well, can you give me an example of one?
Not, say, for instance, something that has been going on that you have, your family has been doing, and it worked, and it could be something that somebody might like, but you don't have to research, go and do all that. You can start up and in little areas and see how that is without doing the research. You're not doing any research. You're just starting up, and it can grow. Some businesses just people attach to them.
Some
businesses just grow because some people like this. It can be by word of mouth, and you try it. And it don't necessarily have to be something that is in a great need at the time. Like, say, for instance, you wouldn't open up maybe a bakery if you got 15 other bakeries in a small town. But you might be able to open up your business, even if it's not necessary, because you think your products are better than what everybody else's is. And by, say, for instance, if I wanted to do desserts, I know a lot of people like my desserts, and they even try to get me to open up a business. I'm just not ready for a business. And even my lawyer decided he would pay my rent, get me a building. I say, but for me at the time, that was too much for me to do because I was doing other things. But just by word of mouth, and I even met, like, Vicky Wyman's sister. She and I were going to the same church. She thought that my stuff was much better than what she was paying $100 a cake for. And she told me.
And I think that's realistic. I mean, I think that's where a lot of stuff starts. But at the end of the day, when I say do research, that doesn't necessarily mean.
I know what you mean when you say research.
Okay.
Yeah, but I was saying that's good. I did not say that what you were saying wasn't correct. I say sometimes you don't have to do all of that to make it. But it's a good plan.
I have a question
plan.
For you. This was a hypothetical question.
For me or
the
caller?
Okay, say you were, for the caller. Okay, say you were baking these cakes that everybody loves. And say, what would you have done if you made somebody a cake and they said it made them sick? And they had to go to the hospital and they had a huge bill and they turned around and sued you. I mean, because
I wouldn't get anything. I don't have anything to give. If they want to sue me for what I might have in the future, they still wouldn't get anything. When you do things like that, they taking a risk just like I'm taking a risk. Now, if I didn't ask them to buy a cake for me. They came to me.
That's still not the point because if they
yes,
said,
it is, as far as
you,
I'm concerned.
No. Yes, but they can call you off
just
the court.
Hey,
you work in. They
you came to
check.
Me. I didn't ask you to buy nothing from me.
That,
you bought
that
it anyway. You wanted it. That's why
okay,
I am not in business. I'm
lawyer,
not going to deal with that.
The lawyer, the judge would see it differently.
Maybe, maybe not. All depends on who you are. If they get me down here where I live, I know a few judges too and some good lawyers to get me out of it. Life is a chance. And I think I might have the upper hand on that one.
You might have to take a risk. But then wouldn't that would also probably hurt your reputation of you making these cakes.
No,
made a cake or whatever you made,
no, it wouldn't.
And made somebody
I've had people say they didn't like my cake. Did that stop other people from buying from me? No.
They didn't like it. I said made somebody sick. That's a difference.
Well, and then I could say it might not have been the cake that made them sick if they had eaten something else. It might have been something else. let's say we're going to take stomach analysis and find out what really made you sick.
What I will say, just to jump in there, what I will say when it comes to food poisoning, that is one of the most difficult cases to actually prosecute and actually win on when it comes to food poisoning, for one of the reasons that a caller mentioned, which is the fact of having to identify exactly what made the person sick. And I know that's
right.
From personal experience. But going along, you know, with the topic, you know, of starting a business, at the end of the day, regardless of what business you do want to do some type of research. You do want to know what is your cost. You do want to know what are you going to sell for. You do want to know certain things about your business that is going to be integral for you to be able to run a successful business. Now, that research could be a lot of detail and analysis research where you actually have to pay focus groups to go out and collect a lot of data. And then also the research can be very small, where it's something that you can do by yourself single-handedly or, you know, with a partner or two. The research varies from industry to industry based on what the product or service that you're wanting to provide. The second and honestly, one of the most important things to starting a business is writing your business plan. And for a lot of people, you know, writing a business plan is something that is like a mountain to them. And if you actually go to SBA.gov, it actually breaks down a nice little outline for people to actually be able to follow, to be able to structure and start their business plan. And I, honestly, to all the callers, to anybody who have any type of aspirations to actually start it in business, I highly suggest you do a project. You know, do a project for yourself. Make it, and this is something you can do by the end of the year. You know, set a deadline and take whatever idea that you have and, you know, do a little bit of research on it and actually try to come up with a business plan. Because once you do that, most of the work, honestly, is already done. When you're looking at your business plan, when you're looking at writing your business plan, one of the things you're determining in there is how much funding will you need.
We have another caller.
You're looking at, yeah. Who's the next caller?
Okay, 1053.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, how are we doing?
Yeah. I would just like to state that I think to start a business, you first have to have a desire. Have some compassion for the business you want to be in. Most people have some idea what they want to do in life, you know, mm-hmm. They're adults. And I think it's very important that you have compassion for whatever you want to do, because I'm one that believes that if you have compassion for whatever you're doing, you're going to be successful in it, because you're going to become very, very good at that.
I have a question,
and,
caller.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a business?
Okay. Yes.
Okay, and what industry?
Well, it's in financing, real estate financing.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and,
you sounded like one.
Right. I think that most people that go into business, they have an idea of what they want to do and how they want to do it, and they develop a love for that business. And I think that'll make that business success. I don't, no matter what you're doing, because you're
mm-hmm.
going to become very, very good at that business. And I was listening to your previous caller was talking about the cake. Well, Mashawn, you should know this. You have a background in insurance. That's called product liability insurance. So you
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
All this, like this. That's one of the things that you will get to know. Setting up your business, you don't have to have maybe liability insurance or however,
yep.
depending on what type of business that you are in. But I think the main thing in the business, first of all, you got to have a strong desire for independence, because most people just talk about going into business, starting up their business, but they really don't want to sacrifice. And it's a big sacrifice
do the work.
To own your own business.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, because I've started businesses, and I know it's a big sacrifice. And many times I wished I was working at a factory job for many times because you do have to make a great sacrifice to be successful in business. And I think that's one of the most important things. And, of course, you don't have to do your market research or whatever it is. But most most black businesses, when they get started, they really it's a pop, a mom and pop type business. That's most the type of business they're going to start in, mom pop type business. And
why do you think that is?
What is that?
So why do you think that is?
Well, one is it's easier to get started because you can start up with less capital. You don't have to have as much capital. If I wanted to start, I can cook, and I know how to make good barbecue. I can just get me a grill and go on the corner and give the guy $50 a week or whatever it is for that spot and start making money. And I can go from there. Because a friend of mine, he actually did that. He started.
So my uncle did
cooking.
That. My uncle did that as well.
Wait, listen to this story. This friend of mine, he started a barbecue business with the little pit. I think it was at a 7-Eleven store that he would rent space for, you know, give him a little spot. And I bet you it wasn't 2 years that this guy had a business, a barbecue business, a food business at a country club. And he had full menu, yes, from that spot. So it can be done because he knew how to barbecue and he knew the food business and he went forward. And I just think if you got a desire, you're going to make the money. The money will come, I think. Good at what you do and the product that you're selling, you're going to find a market for it, for the service and the product. And then
I think you're hitting a lot of good points. One of the things I would comment on to that, though, is that even with a strong desire, you got to have good business skill sets as well. Because even with that strong desire, it can lead you into making really poor choices, you know, that are bad business choices. It might be great in a manner of how you feel.
Okay, I agree with you, but now that's where a mentor come in.
Right.
You need a mentor. And if you get a good mentor, if you really, you know, got a good mentor, you will know all that. You know the pitfalls of the business. And that's what, you know, another thing, people, they start a business, they don't have an idea about how a business operates, how it functions.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even have a clue. They don't have a clue of it. But you have to have some experience. That's why I always say, whatever you want to do, first get a job doing that job that you're interested in, and learn the business. That's one of a friend of mine, Jewish, that's how they learn the business. They come in and they'll learn the business from you, and when they learn the business, then they take off. And I think that we have to kind of have a spirit like that too, where that we can, learn the business. If I want to be in the food service business, I should be managing a restaurant or something in that business and learn it. And
Absolutely.
Once you learn the business, right? I mean, you have to have a skill. If you don't have a skill, you need to learn one. And the best way to do it is to learn it on another man's dime. That's what I say. Let him teach me all of this. And once I learn the business, now I know the ins and outs of that business, and I can go forward myself, and I'll probably be successful in it because I have experience in it. Because one of the things I find with people that start a business, first thing they want to do, they say, oh, I'm gonna buy this company, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to hire a manager to run it for me. That's the biggest mistake you could probably make because they don't really know the business. They're going to depend on management to come in, and the management is going to rip you off. I know that's experience. I had a business that I was in when it started out. The guy had the experience, but I had the money, okay? 2 years later, he had the experience, I had the experience, and he had the money. it's relevant as to how much you know and hiring managers. You can't just depend on a manager. You got to know something about that business yourself. Like I said,
Absolutely.
I started out with the money, but the other guy had the experience. And 2 years later, I had the experience and he had the money. So just keep that in mind when you hire managers to run your business.
Okay. 1053, hold on. Don't hang up. But we have another caller. 4644, do you have a comment or question?
Yeah, just listening to the conversation. And what this caller that's on now is saying is absolutely accurate.
Okay.
Is that when you work for somebody, you actually are doing a part of that business that you're working in. And it reminded me of myself when I started my company. And I had worked in the industry for a long time, leading crews. I was in structural steel erection. And I started that when I was 19. And I had all white male crews until they started letting, you know, until African Americans started getting involved. But not to no great degree, because we were putting up structural steel buildings like the buildings that fell down in New York during 9/11. Something else you should do is not always, it's what you know about the business, but you always have to demonstrate a character and a persistence about yourself. And one thing that those who are looking to get involved, like bankers, is going to look at how do you pay yourself first when you get paid. When I got paid, I would save at least 35% of my salary every week over years. So you can imagine when a bank, commercial banker, look at that and they're going to see that dedication. Then you have to know the business, like the gentleman said, and you have to show that you know it by how you explain it and how you relate it against the business industry that you're going to work in, or should I say compete in. It's about competition. You got to be able to show your competitors. Show those who make up the complete pie and show how you're going to take pieces from their slice of the pie in order to create yours. Then your business has to have a body of workers. It was easier for me because I worked in a commercial construction, and I hired unionized iron workers. But the same thing can also be applied elsewhere. And, of course, you know, when we're talking about the things that we don't see African Americans in, especially in manufacturing production, something like mining or something like trade, shipping. You don't see them in those areas. At least you don't see them predominantly. So those things, you know, is pertinent. It may not be the only thing, but it's very critical in what it is that you're overall trying to do.
What made you want to go into business?
Well, I had started in that field of work since I was 19 years old. And also, after about 20 years, political climate had changed in the city I was in. See, that's another thing. Businesses control politics. People just vote. So when you can get the politics to do things in that's going to favor your business, whether setting stipulations on minority goals, quote unquote, DBE goals, quote unquote, or putting tariffs on foreign imports. A tariff on a phone, you know what a tariff is, right?
Yes, I do.
When you put a tariff on a foreign import, that's to help local and national companies. Why is that? Well, go ahead, sir.
Go ahead. I thought you was asking me. I was about to answer.
Yeah, I'm asking you. You can jump in there.
So
the goods
that's
coming in is cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. So like you have China, you have India. When they pretty much opened up to like the global trading system, you have first our companies went to Mexico because they was working at a lower wage. Then they left Mexico and went to China because they were working for a lower wage. But now you see a lot of companies moving from China into India because they're willing to work for even a lesser wage. And those lesser wages to create those goods ultimately helps drive the cost of the production of that item lower. So when we're working here in the United States, let's say making a car, and it costs, as far as labor, just throwing hypothetical numbers out there, $500 to far as labor to make that car, but they can make that same car for $50 per car in China. Well, that puts them at a
And you know another
advantage.
Thing,
and
a green pepper in those countries don't cost $1.50. It costs probably 15 cents. The cost of living is cheaper. And that's reflected in the cost. Here you want to have $20 and $25 minimum wage. Well, you're not going to have much industry going on trying to compete with the world. And that's not going to happen. Because people are not going to be paying what they don't have and don't think that that is acceptable. So all that politics comes into play.
So what do you think about the minimum wage? Do you think the minimum wage should be a livable wage?
No. I'm going to tell you, and I'm speaking about the ethnic group that we call Black African American.
Mm-hmm.
Your concern should not be minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
Minimum wage is for people who's working a summer job trying to pay for books and that in college or school.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be a livable wage. A part-time job to if you are sending a child to tutoring and you need – well, the part-time job is fine, but to live off of it, no, it shouldn't be like that because it, in some cases you have kids dropping out of high school to go get a minimum wage job because first they stand with mama, so they ain't including that cost when mama kick you out.
Mm-hmm.
We can just stop right there.
Mm-hmm.
If you get have babies, then
When you look at when we talk about a minimum wage, in my personal view, there should be two different minimum wages, right? That's my personal point of view. For those who are what I call child labor, those who are not independent, you know, living on their own, providing for themselves and trying to establish themselves in a professional setting and build a family and a career versus those who are. Because you look at, you know, billion-dollar companies such as Walmart, such as McDonald's, you know, they took heavy criticism because they make all this profit, yet most of their workforce are on government assistance. You look at McDonald's, who is now having to drastically increase the wage because almost everyone that they hire, we're going to hire you in at minimum wage. We're going to give you a 5 cent, 10 cent raise a year. And you're going to have to live with that and you're going to have to deal with that. And for a lot of people that wasn't in high school, that wasn't in college, that was actually working these jobs trying to put food on their table for three or four kids, you know, that's a huge issue. You look at Walmart. Walmart isn't a place where, you know, a lot of people in high school go to work. I mean, there's actually a wage requirement for Walmart. And Walmart has taken a lot of backlash on having the majority of their workforce that actually work inside the stores living on minimum wage. I think minimum wage, yes, as a because not even just those massive companies. Let's look at something that actually affects everyone right now, especially during this coronavirus pandemic. You look at childcare. When you go to childcare, most people in the childcare industry start off at minimum wage. So you have to earn certificates and certifications in order to get bumped up, right? And even
let me ask you a question.
You're only getting bumped up 50 cents, 75 cents. You know, I mean, it's not a big bump.
Mm-hmm. You may see, you're talking about some jobs, but you have to look at the other spectrum, too. Now, you're talking about child care. The person that's putting their child in that facility has to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're saying they work in minimum wage, how are they going to pay more? Quite naturally, they're going to look for the least affordable. I mean, the most affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the thing. Why come there isn't a program or assertive effort to steer young blacks into those high-paid, high-demanding jobs. They exist.
Mm-hmm.
The STEM fields. The National Society of Black Engineers has been trying to put more blacks into STEM since the 1970s. And when these students get these degrees, they are snatched by major corporations. And
mm-hmm.
I've watched this myself. I'll take in their national conventions they have once a year and also other activities. In 2017, 2018, 2019, 2017, 2018, Northrop Grumman hired over 400 STEM graduates right off the convention floor 2 years in a row. And in 2019, Lockheed Martin done the same thing as the convention in the Cabot Center in Detroit. And those students are starting off at $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
But they was prepared coming up through elementary school, on through high school.
Mm-hmm.
When they came out of high school, they were prepared for the rigors of college. You go on National Society of Black Engineers website, they got at least 6,000, 7,000, or 8,000 jobs that's being advertised they're being advertised. And they're not something that's been sitting up there for 2 or 3 years. They're a reason. So if that demand exists and we see foreigners
mm-hmm.
coming in trying to fulfill those demands,
jobs.
Why come
mm-hmm.
it's not being fulfilled with African Americans in this country to a bigger
That's
degree
a
than
question.
What it is?
That's a great question. And I'll tell you what my viewpoint is on that. You know, obviously there's opinion, you know, but as a person who grew up, you know, and went through the same time period that you're talking about right now, you know, those opportunities wasn't really presented, you know, to me. As a person who went to a really good school, it wasn't a private school, but it was a really good school. And when they see people like me, oh, you're a black guy, you're super fast, you're super strong, you're very great on the court, you're very great on the field, that's what you need to focus on. And what we need in general to change that perspective that is being pushed on our children. I mean, even parents push it on the kids. Hey, what sports you're going to play? What sports you're going to play?
How should it be? Who should change it? And how should it be changed?
Well, where
that's
I believe
not the days.
Isn't,
that, yeah,
what,
that's
what,
not the days that changed that. That's the family and the parents and the family that has
exactly,
to change that.
Exactly.
They control
exactly.
that school district.
Well, if they vote, they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at other ethnic groups, and my favorite is the Nigerians.
Mm-hmm.
Nigerians here in
I
the United States.
I see a lot
States,
of them up here in D.C.
They are, in Houston, in the,
mm-hmm.
in the Texas area too. Nigerians, and I'm not talking about the ones that just come here. You got first and second generation. They have the highest educational attainment than any other immigrant group, even whites and Asians, and they have a higher household income than whites and Asians. And they black as Wesley Snipes. So you know what that tells you? This is somebody we need to be studying. See what it is that they do in order to achieve that. Would you agree?
100%. I think a lot of that comes from, and just being realistic about it, a lot of that comes from, one, the culture. You know, and when you look at black culture, African-American cultures, those who are descended from slaves here in the United States, a lot of those people, you know, realistically are brainwashed, you know, and they're trying to learn and figure a lot of stuff out for themselves. A lot of those parents, you know, when their kids go to school, they can't come home and get help with their homework, you know.
Did you play sports?
And a lot
you played basketball.
Of course. I played football.
Let me ask you a question.
I ran track.
Let me
champion.
Ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
How many young people like yourself was expendable
mm-hmm.
in order to produce one LeBron James, one Kobe Bryant, one Stephen
mm-hmm.
Curry? How many through their athletic years from Pee Wee on up, how many do you think
millions.
Got pushed to the side?
Millions.
That's what I'm talking about. So it's a young child,
mm-hmm.
a baby, when he or she starts walking, and
mm-hmm.
get ready to say like the third grade, they should be assessed and evaluated to see what their inner abilities are. They can be done. You probably practice your free throw shots every night in the gym. You probably made 100 free throws, practices, shots. But did you go home and do 100 math problems every night?
Me personally?
See?
I'm going to be honest. I'm going to answer your question. Me personally, when it comes to, like, the athletics aspect of things, I love running. I love everything about working out. So I did that vigorously. But at the same time, I love to be right. That's what was always more important to me than anything else, was absolutely being right and being able to prove that. And so when it comes to, like, math, when it comes to, like, social studies, science, and things of that nature, absolutely, I was always on top of that. I was straight A.
Now, you're an exception. You're an exception,
hey,
but the data say
I made an F in spelling. That was the one thing I just couldn't get. You know,
you're an exception. I started my grandson off with baseball. When he was 2 years old, ma'am.
I don't want you to hang up. I want you to stay on. Hold on a second, Kenny. Do you have a question?
Yes, I have a question for both gentlemen that having this very good conversation.
Okay.
How come our schools in predominantly black communities in the inner cities do not have curriculums in the high schools or in the junior high schools that are based or emphasized on the STEMs and entrepreneurship and business ownership?
Well, if you want to play it, Carl, you can answer.
In the state of Missouri, the state statutes, which is the laws as it applies to education, and this has went back to 1875, but most recently, you know, placed as it is. It says that the curriculum, textbooks, and teacher instruction is up to the district. The state board of education, the board of education cannot mandate a district other than what that district wants to do itself. So you know who that is, don't you? It goes back to the people. Who are the people? Parents and families. They control that school district. They supposed to put in there what's best for their children. Not a superintendent, not a principal, not administrator.
So how can we get parents, grandparents, or guardians to see how this is important, that this curriculum, because like a lot of curriculums in a lot of inner city has not changed over the past 40 years. How can we see?
Well, you got to realize.
And I will remind you that a lot of the school system in the inner city are run by a lot of black superintendents, a lot of black educators now, a lot of black chancellors. How can we get them to see that we had to change the direction of these curriculums?
Money.
Well,
that's
the
answer. Money.
Let me give you another answer too, and I'm gonna ask you.
Hold on,
you a question.
Hold on, before you do that, I just want to answer that. A lot of, and I see this even when in my community college, we were ranked top three community colleges in the nation. A lot of things that are being done. And especially in the high school, middle school, and elementary level, they should be taught towards a test, that our kids make this on this test. And based off of what your percentile is, you get a certain amount of extra funding. And that's really what it is. It boils down to, when you look at the business aspect of it, it's the money. How do we get more funding into our school? Well, we got to teach our kids to be able to pass this test. And what the problem of that is that test shows you how to be a worker. That test doesn't show you how to actually go out and achieve high success in your life and your career field as far as starting businesses and, you know, even IT. And what we also have to look at is, one, how many people actually went to school and had a black male teacher? And then for those who was lucky enough to have one, how many of those did you have? You understand? And the educational system that is in the classroom is predominantly white females. You can do the numbers. You can do the statistics. You can look it up. It's predominantly white females all the way through grade school, all the way up through high school.
Let me comment on a little bit of that.
Change a lot.
Let me comment on a little bit of that. because you got a whole lot of noise that you can talk about. But on the issue with teachers, the male teacher in the classroom, where you need the presence of the male is in the home. Another point, the gentleman that called in.
Oh, I totally agree.
Are you rich enough, or should I say, do you have enough income where you can send your child to a private school or a school of specialty? I mean, just a yes or no. And if you say no, but I know you want your child to be the best that he or she can be. You take them to museums, you expose them to things and all that stuff where your child, when they go to the classroom, they are ahead of a lot of the other students in the class. It may be several more like them, but they are required to stay in that classroom where they are not being pushed, not being challenged. Now, the thing that can to overcome that is school choice with vouchers, where when you have a child like yourself, your child, that child can be placed where you think it's best for them to go along with your long-term educational goals and plans. But once again, it's blacks that's against that. Blacks at the political level and blacks at the organization level like the NAACP. What their excuse is that, sir, if you take your child out of here, like the other gentleman said, the host of the show, our grades are going to drop and we won't get as much money. Yeah. You follow me?
So don't that responsibility falls on the educator as well as the parent to have the curriculum more advanced into the different areas to prepare that child for adulthood, as far as entrepreneurship, STEM, and become a business owner.
Well, short answer to that, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, you got, in my opinion, you got to look at a lot of these parents when you got to realize the way the economy is set up, and I think a lot of people overlook this, you know, personally. The way the economy is set up right now today is that you need two incomes to be able to have a actual to provide for your home. You need two incomes. You know,
but the actuality is that 72% of black families are single parent homes.
So therefore,
we talk about right now, how do we prepare our children for adulthood so they won't become like my generation, just having a job for 35, 40 years and from it. But however, becoming business owners, like my man said, become a business owners and STEMs. Don't you know that all these Indians, and y'all been talking about Nigerians, all these foreigners are in the STEM. You came to ask the average black man, what is the damn STEM?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know,
they're going to take a stimulus check.
Yeah. You know, what you're saying is absolutely correct. Now you're starting to lay it out on the table and look at it for what it is. And I keep telling you, it's black. I'm not saying this is deceitfully, but the politics in the black community is terrible because they promote that. And
we're talking about local level. We're not even talking about
local level. That's what I'm talking about. The local level and the state level.
Yes.
It's really it's terrible. Yes, ma'am.
Hold on. Don't hang up, but I want you to hold on. But I got another caller to come in.
5240 was first.
Okay, well, 5240. I'm sorry, I lost my screen for a second. 5240.
Hello.
This is
1233. Hello.
Hello. You hear me?
Yes.
How we doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I mean, this is another good show tonight. I enjoy everybody, the host, but like you said a long time ago, me and some friends talked about this, a few years ago, plus, with my brother. You said the same thing. When you're in the inner city, they don't give you a lot of classes that, you know, a good trade, a good technical class that you can go to that prepare you for the future. It's like just get your education, get pushed out there, and just get a job. Like Alan said, this is a good show tonight. I just want to say that back when I was growing up, I feel a lot of times they should have had more stuff for us to learn, more technical stuff, than to just go to school and push us through the inner city just to graduate and get on with the next. So this is a good topic, and in the future, I think, you know what I mean, Blacks need to really, you know, do like a lot of African-Americans in other countries, come study. There's a lot of technical jobs out there. I was listening to NPR. There's a lot of technical jobs out there for the future. If Blacks not on it, they're going to be left behind within the next, what, 15 to 20 years, because there's a lot of technical jobs coming up. American Blacks are lagging behind, not Blacks from other countries. American Blacks are lagging behind big time, they say. And for the job market, they're going to get worse and worse. We're so busy worried about Turkey, and we're so busy worried about other bullshit that's not important. And right up the street, they're saying, hey, man, they up there. So we got to stop preparing our kids' time for the jobs in 2030, 2035. They're going to be making good money.
Mm-hmm.
But are we prepared? That's all I got to say, and I enjoy the show. Keep doing the good work.
Thank you. 1233, you're next.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I was just going to kind of make a comment about what the host said. I think it is a cultural thing with the Black community, especially for Black men. They're only taught, like, you play sports. Like, a lot, I know so many Black men, they really had hopes of, like, going to the professional league. And then once that dream is shattered, like, they don't have nothing else to fall back on.
It's true.
Like, they're not taught anything else but that. Like, I hear that from so many people, like, oh, I was supposed to be in the NBA. I was supposed to be in the NFL. Like, the same story over and over again, and no plan after that. But, I mean, that comes from the education system. And the education system, it really isn't designed for us. And I think people are making a very good point. African-Americans versus Africans from other countries, whether they're first generation or second generation, like, it's a difference. It's not the same. Like, we can't put ourselves in the same category as those people. Like, they don't put themselves in the same category as us. Like, they're not for us either, but they don't deal with the same issues we deal with.
No, they're not. They for themselves.
I got a question, caller. What do you do?
Yes.
What field are you in?
I'm a teacher.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this, caller. Growing up, and even, you know, right now in your career, how many Black teachers do you see or have you seen?
Okay. Growing up, I don't believe I had any Black teachers until I got to college. I went to a predominantly white school.
Mm-hmm.
But saying I went to a predominantly white school, we didn't have any, like, back then, any, like, master curriculum. I mean, we were kind of all taught the same and treated fairly in school as far as education-wise. But, I mean, the white people are different with their children.
Can I say something on that?
One more question. Go ahead.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah, Michael Jordan never played under no Black coaches that I know of. But he honed his skills where? What you could call a home. So tell you the truth, I can talk about what I've done for my sibling. My last grandson, I told you, I started him in baseball when he was two. I used to take him out to the field and hit him 100 ground balls every, you know, time we go out there. When he got to 89, he started getting real serious. You know why? Because if he missed one, he had to start all over. I made him do 100 math problems, and he was the same way. He got so disturbed with that, me making him start over. He went to his mama, my daughter, and he said, "Mama, Papa's making me start all over." You know what she told him? He made me do the same thing. Get back in there. So you got to have that program, that work, and you got to sacrifice because you want your child to do better than you did in society. And that's a continuum.
I think, honestly, especially in the Black community, that we are seeing, what I am seeing, you know, from my family and things of that nature, it's not only do we want our kids to do better, but we believe for some odd reason that shielding them from the hard work, shielding them from some of the pressure, you know, is providing that better life. You know, where, as the example you just gave, where your grandson went to the mother and complained instead of the mother saying, oh, this is my baby, he ain't got to do that, you know, telling him, no, you got to do that. That extra reinforcement, you know, where they get it from all sides, and it's a collective effort. You know, what they say, it takes a village to raise a child. That collective effort where they see those examples all the way around them props them up on a pedestal and forces them to not be lesser than what they see around them. So I think
about our parents are like that. You had to supported your daughter, okay, by raising the grandson, helping raising the grandson. But how many single parents have that support?
That used to be the norm, because if a family, I'm gonna tell you what happened. See, I'm older than anybody on here.
Not
back
me.
In the day, if there was a family, I'm probably older than you too. I just sound young. But back in the day, if a family seen Auntie Susie not taking care of her kids, guess what happened? That family came and took that child out of that household. That was the first child protective service. There was no child protective service. That was the child protective service. They took that child out of that household and put him with somebody else where they were properly tended to, because apparently Susie wasn't able to do so.
But the extended family is gone now. You talk about the extended family. There are no more extended family. In fact, the government, the CPS, have become the foster care system, have become the extended family.
I agree with you, sir. So you know what that means? You got to work toward bringing that back into effect. Yeah, you got to work toward bringing that back into effect.
We got to hold ourselves accountable.
Okay, we have another caller.
Yeah, she's 111. 111.
Are you there, caller?
1111.
Caller, you have
1111.
Hello?
You have a question? Hello?
You can hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have a question. Well, I have a comment.
Okay.
I have kids that I've raised, and I basically, you know, kept them around positive people. Took them out to eat when days that I'm off work, we went shopping, and my kids were honor roll students. They went to college. Well, two of them went to college and graduated. One of them went to college twice, was on the dean list, and graduated. So, I mean, and then it learned at home. I mean, it was all about those books in my house. It wasn't about, you know, you out in the street. It was about you learning as much as you can, and that you can do anything that you want to do. You know, you can be anything you want to be, and that's what I raised my kids to be. So I don't, you know, school is all right, but I just think that it starts at home, and you make that person, other people do too, but you make them who they are. You instill that in them, along with other family members and other people in the street. But I kept them positive, and I always, you know, kept them going and keeping that encouragement with them. So that's what I think. As far as that business,
absolutely.
Yeah, and I want to comment on that business. Now, I had a daycare, and so business is hard, and you have to do your research. You have to. I went to workshops. I did my hours. I did cards. I did business cards. I had business shirts on. Pins with my business name. I went out and did flyers. I went to schools. I went to businesses and put my flyers up where everybody knows. I even put it in the phone book, put my business name in the phone book. It's a lot of work. You have to be dedicated. You have to, you have to grow that business, and whatever it means necessary, you just got to do it, because it's not going to grow just opening it up. It's got to be, you know, you just got to really go out and do the work for it, and then you got to be dedicated to it. This has got to be something you love.
Well, you've done a lot of sacrifice too, ma'am. I know you did. And that's a requirement. You got to be willing to sacrifice.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get off from here. You got 4 minutes left. I'm going to tell you what my sacrifice was. I had some New Balance shoes. My grandson started high school. I wore them shoes, and they had holes in them. My toes were sticking out. And he would look at that, and he said, "Papa, why are you continuing to wear these shoes?" And I told him, "You get out of college and I get me some new ones." So he graduates next month from LSU with a degree in engineering, and he's going to start on his general aviation license. So all that comes into play. I appreciate the opportunity. If you have another discussion like this, I'll come back.
We're going to continue next week because there was more we needed to cover. So we will have part two next week. So
what's your times? And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, our time is 7 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Wednesday.
I'll catch you next week. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So, I mean, I think, you know, with all that being said, as far as, you know, a lot of that conversation today was more, in my opinion, driven around working, and still, in my opinion, you know, as far as the education and things of that nature. As Nishan said, you know, we'll continue this. And one of the things that I think that we really have to, you know, look at is not just getting a job. As long as our mentality and our thought process is revolve around getting a job, we're always going to be looking for someone else to do something for us. We're always going to be underneath the thumb because we're not the ones writing the checks. I remember, you know, when I was in high school, everyone told me I was going to go to the NFL. And I always told them, like, you know, my desires isn't really the NFL. Instead of being an NFL player, I want to be the guy that's signing that NFL player's check. I want to be the owner. And that is the mentality that we have to instill into our youth. And when we see, even if the kids ain't ours, you know, when we see the black youth, we really have to do our due diligence, because we're starting so far behind. And they're starting so far behind, we have to go out of our way. You know, we got to be the ones to create the future that we want to see. We got to hold ourselves accountable, you know. And like we discussed throughout the night, and as I've always state, you know, it starts at home first. It always starts at home first. We have tremendous impacts on our children that we're raising, and we have to acknowledge that. And, you know, at the end of the day, our children might have dreams that are different from ours. Our goal as parents is to make sure we direct them in the right path, encourage them, and help them pursue their dreams and goals. And that's one of the things I think that we have to do. I think next week we'll talk more about starting that business and actually getting into the details of how to start a business. And like I said, I challenge everyone to get an idea, get a thought, you know. And if you don't have one, you know, if you have, you know, a son, daughter, nephew, niece, a cousin, auntie, get an idea, a thought from them, and sit down and actually write out a business plan. You don't have to act on it, but actually go through the process of seeing what that looks like. See what goes into
Thank
that.
You.
Not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and chip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised.